Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, before I jump in and introduce you to our guests, I would love to thank our sponsors, the people over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States. They have offices in California, New York, and are constantly expanding. So please do keep them in mind for all of your temporary, permanent, and executive search needs. Today we have joining with us on the show, Mike Abrashoff. Mike was the junior most officer in the Pacific Fleet when he took command of the near worst performing ship. 12 months later, the USS Benfold was the best ship in the entire Navy, using the same crew. The story of that stunning transformation has lessons for every organization. Leadership matters, and culture is everything. Mike's written 3 books. His first, It's Your Ship, has sold over 1 million copies. Thanks so much for joining us today, Mike.
Happy to be here, Jennifer.
Yeah, it's such a delight to have you on the show. You know, I was privileged enough to get to hear you speak in person at our partner retreat back in, I think it was May of this year. And I was floored, Mike. As I mentioned to you offline, I've been very lucky to hear some of the best speakers around the world and to interview many as well. And I will remember till the day I die your talk, because it had so many wonderful pivotal moments of how any one of us who either is a leader or wants to become a leader can take the reins and learn how to do that. So tell our listeners who might not be familiar with your book or your story, can you share with them a little bit about your story and the story that you share in your book, It's Your Ship?
Well, I got command of a destroyer in the Navy, and we weren't quite the worst ship in the Pacific Fleet, but, you know, we were near bottom, and we had tremendously high turnover. We had one of the highest accident rates of any ship in the Navy, some of the poorest performance metrics. And I take command of this ship, and I'm obsessed over all the things I can't influence. Like, I don't get to choose the people I work with, and I don't get to choose our missions, and I'm not allowed to go back and ask for more money. And I'm thinking, you know, this is the end of my career. I'm never going to get promoted again. And then I decided, you know what, I'm going to focus on the things I can influence. And the one thing I can influence the most is myself, and how I show up to the people I'm trying to influence, and have that self-awareness as to how I'm being perceived. And am I coming across with a sense of humility, or is it a sense of arrogance and ego? And so, you know, I spend a lot of time searching for, you know, how I'm showing up and how I want to show up. And then I changed our culture. And, you know, people make culture too darn difficult. For me, it's, would you want your son or daughter to come work for you and see you in action every day? And if you're proud, you're on the right track. And if you're embarrassed, fix it. And I decided to fix everything I was embarrassed about. And I did something that had never been done before in the history of the Navy. I interviewed every sailor on the ship individually, all 310 of them. And I got to know their names and their spouses' names and their children's name and their hometowns. And what they wanted to accomplish in their lives and what they were most proud of in their lives. And that enabled me to connect with them and engage them. And what happened was they started taking greater ownership. They started collaborating across the 5 departments on the ship. And in 15 months, we go from being one of the worst ships in the Pacific Fleet to being awarded the trophy for the best ship in the Pacific Fleet. And in years 3 and 4 after I left the ship, USS Benfold won the award for best ship in the entire U.S. Navy. So they continue to get better. And that's what It's Your Ship is about, is stories from our time on the ship where it wasn't about me barking orders and commanding excellence. It was about creating a culture and a climate where people could use their talents for the good and drive performance. And at the end of the day, all that talent was there before I ever got there. It's just that nobody took ownership, nobody took accountability, and there was no collaboration. And by focusing on those pieces, you know, we enhance performance.
Yeah, it's such an extraordinary story, Mike, because I think so many of us find ourselves in that position in life where we wind up with the rough side or the rough deal of things. Oh, I got dealt a tough hand. This just isn't fair, Mike. You know, I got stuck with one of the crappiest ships in the Navy. You know, we say that to ourselves all the time in all sorts of scenarios in our life. Oh, I got stuck with this family, or I got stuck being born here or in this job, and it's just my boss. Everything is my boss or my colleague's fault or my employee's fault. And I love what you're saying, Mike, because what I hear you say is kind of at the crux of everything you talk about, and It's My Ship and in all of the wonderful keynotes you do, is it's about accountability. If you can take accountability and not point the finger at the people around you and just say, hey, what are the things that I can control here and how can I make a difference with those things? That puts the onus directly on you, and then you're able to make magic happen, right?
One of my mentor that had the greatest impact on me, the last day I worked for him prior to getting command of the ship, brought me into his office, sat me down and said, Mike, no matter how hard you try, your ship is never going to be perfect. He said, you're going to have disappointment every day. And he said, whenever you're disappointed in an outcome, I want you to remember one thing. He said, assume your shipmates wanted to do a great job. And if you don't get the results you're looking for, don't blame them first, but instead look inward and ask yourself what you could have done differently or better to have generated a better outcome. Did you communicate the goals? Did you give them the training? Did you give them the time and the resources to do a great job? But most importantly, did the process support them delivering the results you were looking for? And, you know, what I find today is too many people are too quick to blame others for poor results and poor performance. And when I got results that I wasn't happy with, I looked inward and asked myself what I could have done differently or better. Instead of pointing the finger at others, I point the finger at myself. And when you can do that, I think you can get to the heart of what caused it to not work out and fix the process instead of fixing the blame, which is what, you know, all too often we're the first thing we're doing is, you know, fix the blame instead of fixing the problem.
And I think that's a great attribute, speaking of leadership, Mike, that people look for in a leader. It's for any of us out there who might have ever worked for a leader who was always pointing the finger, it's diminishing to us as human beings. You come into work, and even if you try your best and your boss is up, you know, you just didn't cut it. You didn't do this way I wanted, and you didn't do that. It makes you feel downtrodden and not want to come in and do your best job. And I think one of the most valuable things one of my mentors taught me years ago is it's about communication. Once you realize what's missing with party A or party B, or maybe what's missing with yourself, the second part of it that I've learned, Mike, is all in communication. Because if I go to you and let's say we work together and you're reporting to me and I say, Mike, you know, you really didn't do that right. And I clearly didn't give you the instructions, but you need to step up your game. You're going to respond one way, as opposed to if I say to you, Mike, you know what I love that you did? You came in early yesterday. I love that you're always coming to me with new ideas and solutions. What if we did a little bit more of this? How would that work for you? And when one of my mentors taught me that years ago, it completely shifted how I personally managed and led my team. And I'm sure it sounds like that's a similar principle to what you're talking about, is it's all in the way that you deliver the communication of whatever it is you discover, right?
Well, and what I would sometimes say is, you know, we shouldn't be satisfied with those results. Let's talk about what we could have or should have done differently or better. And I would let them go first. Instead of me telling them what went wrong, I let them go first. And then I could listen to their point of view. And then I could add my own point of view. And by doing that, we could get to the heart of the problem and make sure it doesn't happen again.
I think that's brilliant, Mike. I'm so happy you mentioned that because I think that when we as human beings give people the opportunity to be accountable themselves, that's the greatest privilege. If, you know, I was with a dear friend of mine and she asked me a question about business. She was very frustrated with the fact that the people she was collaborating on a project, she does interior design, weren't doing what they were supposed to do. And my initial gut reaction, Mike, was to give her the feedback, because you can see as an outsider often what's missing or what's not working. But if you tell somebody, hey, this isn't working, often they won't be able to hear it, or they won't change it. Or, you know, if you give it to them, it'll go in one ear and out the other. And in this case, I had to pause myself because I could hear the answer for her, but I knew that she would get more value if she discovered it for herself. And I turned that question on her, much like you did. And I said, you know, you tell me, what do you think you could have done differently? And in that, she was able to embody and get, it's not just a quick answer solution. It's something that she could actually see as a way that she could be with people going forward.
And eventually I came to realize that 50 or 60% of my job was either listening or communicating back where we're going, why it's important, why we have to have such high standards, and what your role is in achieving those high standards. And so it's all about listening and communicating. And we're so busy today, you know, with emails and texts and meetings and everything, we forget the blocking and tackling of those interpersonal skills that actually make a difference and help us drive performance.
Yeah, I love that, Mike. And one of my favorite stories that you shared when I got to hear you speak is, I think one of us in the audience had asked, how do you handle it if you have a challenging person? Because I know that's an obstacle we all kind of face in an office. Sometimes we may be the challenging person ourselves, but let's say hypothetically, you have a challenging person on your ship or in your company. How do you then interact with that person? I think you had some brilliant advice on that from what I recall.
Well, I would interview the person and ask them point blank, how do you think you're being perceived? And then I would give them my impression, and then we would talk about what we could do differently to change that perception and to make them more effective. And I'll never forget, I had I used to have lunch with my sailors once a week. And in the Navy, the captain never eats lunch with the sailors. But I decided every Wednesday noon, I'm going to have lunch with my sailors. And I go down, everybody's stunned. I'm there to begin with. I get my tray. I go to an empty seat. And my command master chief put his arm in front of me to stop me and says, you can't sit there. And I said, why not? He said, because Michael Pickett is sitting there. And I said, well, who's Michael Pickett? And he said, he's the biggest whiner and complainer on the ship, and I don't want you having lunch with him. And I said, that's exactly who I want to have lunch with. You know, I don't want to talk to people who are going to blow sunshine up my trousers. I want to talk to the whiners and complainers to find out what they're upset about. And when I listened to Michael Pickett, I realized, one, he was brilliant. He ended up being one of the smartest sailors on the ship. And two, I found myself in agreement with 95% of what he was saying. And three, I found out that his emotional intelligence was very low because of lack of self-esteem, and that caused him to come across as a whiner and complainer. But by listening to what he had to say and his recommendations to improve, he was spot on. And he saw things that that other people on the ship didn't see. And I made it a point to have lunch with him, you know, every 5 or 6 weeks, and I would build him up and help his self-esteem so that he didn't have to come across as a whiner and complainer. And sure enough, once he gained confidence in himself, he started to become a leader and people started listening to him. But I could have written him off as a whiner and complainer, but instead I listened to him and it's like, gee, he's got some great ideas and I need to listen to him. And once he felt like he was being listened to, it bestowed upon him that something that was missing in his life that he never got, and we were able to fill in, and he became an outstanding contributor on the ship.
I think that is so poignant because it is one of the attributes of great leaders where a leader can pull greatness out of somebody and see and listen for greatness in that person. I think that no matter who we are or where we come from, I think we all have the capacity, emotional intelligence or not, to be successful and to be better than we know ourselves to be. But sometimes it takes a great leader like you, Mike, to be able to listen to somebody and to be able for the first time in that person's life to know that they actually are capable and they could be successful, and to have somebody believe in them can help up level their confidence to the point where they have unprecedented success. And it's so beautiful that you were able to offer that to him.
Well, and what I found out by listening to him is that he cared passionately about the ship and making it a better place. He just didn't know how to articulate it. And so by, you know, investing my time in him, he toned down how he was articulating it, and he became more effective at his level in influencing up and down the chain of command because I invested some time in him. And in all honesty, it was a pleasure investing my time because I could see the results. And so I never regretted the amount of time I invested in listening to sailors and trying to understand what journey they were on and how I could then connect them to our purpose. And once we were able to do that, we saw some pretty explosive increases in performance.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the other favorite stories that I recall from your talk, Mike, that was just incredible, was there was a gentleman, I think you said, he was very young, and he realized that he might have been similar, that he was complaining about having to repaint the ship every month because, right, it would get rusty. Do you remember the story I'm talking about?
Absolutely, and so I would ask, in my interviews of the sailors, I would ask him, what do you like most about the ship? What do you like least? And what would you change if you were the captain? And they could tell me anything. Nothing was off limits. I wouldn't think any worse of them. And one sailor asked me if he knew how often we painted the ship. And I didn't have a clue because I never monitored it. And it turned out we were painting the ship 6 times a year. And every time we painted the ship, it took us a month to paint it. So every other month we're painting your ship. And like it hit me, this is $5 an hour work. And he said, the reason why we're painting is because whenever a new piece of equipment is added topside to the hull of the ship, it's being held in place with nuts, bolts, screws, washers, and fasteners that are made out of ferrous metal that rust in salt water. And when it rusts, it streaks rust stains down the side of the ship. And as a result, we're painting the ship every other month. And it's like, gee, if we just replace the cause of the rust, then we don't have to spend our time doing $5 an hour work maintaining it. And so we spent about $25,000, changed out everything we could, painted the ship. We did not have to paint the ship again for the next 10 months. And with the time that was saved, we could focus on higher value work, like figuring out how to defend ourselves better. And not only was that program implemented throughout the rest of the Navy, the people who procure the equipment now have to take in the total cost of ownership of that equipment, like how the sailors spend their days maintaining it, whereas before they never even cared because to them labor was free. And to me, labor isn't free. And we need to be smarter in how we procure the equipment so that sailors can operate it at a higher level.
Yeah, I think it goes to show you, Mike, that there are so many opportunities for us to learn from our team members. You know, when we work or lead an organization or are in a leadership role in any capacity, paid or unpaid, I think that the greatest and most valuable feedback we can get as a leader is just listen and hear what people have to say. Because sometimes when you're in a leadership role, depending on the size of the company or organization, you might be 1,000 or 10,000 people removed from the people who are doing the everyday work. And it's at that level sometimes that great innovation can happen and that changes can actually be made for the better, just to your point.
And, you know, there's a lot of work, dangerous work that gets done in this country. And I speak a lot on safety as well. And when those people on the front line feel like they're part of the team and feel engaged, they have a tendency to comply with safety standards at a higher percentage. And so whether you sit in an office or whether you're on the factory floor, when the people on the front line feel like they're being listened to, they have a propensity to adhere to the standards that you're setting for them at a higher rate.
That makes a lot of sense. I can see that because I think that it all comes back to your earlier point about ownership and allowing people to feel participatory, because I think in any organization, law firm, corporation, otherwise, if there's a disconnect from the vision or from the value that the entity is trying to create, and they don't understand the why, then that person is going to show up, and yes, they might do the rote work, but it's not going to be done with any vim, vigor, or passion. And so what I hear you talking about is instilling kind of that passion and having people feel like they have a say in any organization or the Navy or in the government, whatever it feels or whatever that looks like, that can really give people a sense of contribution. And as human beings, we're designed, Mike, to want to contribute. It's how we're designed. If you give somebody something for free, eventually over time, they'll become sad and depressed because they didn't have to earn it. And so I love this idea of you're giving people a chance to earn it, not just earn their paycheck, but also to earn their place at the company and to be able to contribute long term.
Well, I had an aha moment, and I think I learned more from my sailors than they learned from me. And I was interviewing early in when I asked, soon after I started the interviews, I'm interviewing a technician, and he asked me how to do a procedure. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you're the technician. Why are you asking me how to do this? And instead of telling him how to do it, I said to him, what do you think? If you own this ship, how would you do this? He said, well, this is what I would do. And I said, do it. And he turned in flawless performance, and it was better performance than if I had told him how to do it. And I was at an event, you know, similar to yours about 2 years ago, and the CEO was pointing his finger at everybody in the room and said, you need to be accountable for the results. And I never once said to my sailors, you need to be accountable for the results. What I said to them was, what do you think? And as a result, they felt empowered. And what do you think eventually became, it's your ship. That's what I would say to them. It's your ship. You own it just as much as I do. If you see something that needs to be done, step up to the plate and take action. And what organizations, they want to get to the accountability piece, but you can't get there unless people feel empowered first. And if they don't feel empowered, all they are order takers, and order takers don't accept accountability. So what many organizations don't understand, if, you know, if their people aren't empowered and if they don't, you know, feel like they're part of the team, they're never going to get to that ownership and accountability piece that is critical to get you to the next higher level of performance. And I stumbled on it, quite honestly, by accident when this technician asked me how to do a procedure. And so instead of telling him, I said, what do you think? And what I learned from that was stop telling people how to do things and instead ask them how they would do it. And so seriously, I've stopped telling people how to do things. From that one interview, I stopped telling people how to do things and let them design the solution. And if I could, you know, add something based on my experience to make it better, I would. But if their solution would get there, I'd say run with it. It's your ship. And when they felt empowered, they took ownership, and we become the best ship in the Pacific Fleet.
I think what's really incredible that you just touched on, Mike, is that you let go of the ego and the arrogance, because it's tempting when you get into a leadership role. You know, people think to themselves, I had to claw my way here. I got this degree. I put in this many hours, and therefore you need to listen to me. But if you really think about it, it's actually coming from an ego-based place. And what you're talking about is A, having patience, and B, you're talking about being curious and letting people and assuming that they're as smart, if not smarter than you are, because you're asking them, how would you do it your way?
And I'm not going to, you know, say that it's ego that kept me from doing it in the past. People are busy today, and every worker in America, every organization is stressed out. They're doing more with less. And sometimes it just seems easier if you just tell somebody how to do it. But then, and you can get by with telling people how to do it, but you don't get the fantastic results. And if you're interested in fantastic results, it's how do you engage them? Let them design the solution. Give them guidance, but stop barking orders at them and assume that they want to do a great job and that they've got a brain and let them free. And that's what I did, was delegate, set them free. They feel empowered. They take ownership. They comply with the standards that I set for them. And we go from having one of the highest accident rates in the Navy to coming in number two for the safety award. So when people feel empowered, they comply, discipline improves, and they comply more with the standards that you lay out for them.
I completely agree with you, Mike. And the other thing that I think that can be said of this is that your perspective of your team members and the people you work with has a direct correlation to how successful or how unsuccessful the team members are. If you come into the team and you say, gosh, I have a team of haphazard people who aren't going to be successful, who are already have this bad track record, and if you listen to them and interact with them from that perspective, as my people, and I hosted another show on Awake TV Network on Thursday mornings, and I had a guest on the show 2 weeks ago, and he was explaining to me from a neuro-linguistic programming standpoint, we have 11 billion bits of information bombarding us per second. And of those 11 billion bits, we're only paying attention to 126 of those bits per second. So if you can imagine, out of 11 billion things to choose from, we could just as easily choose 126 reasons to look for the good in somebody as we could choose to look for the bad in somebody, right?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, so
I always assumed people wanted to do a good job.
exactly.
Unless somebody really proved themselves otherwise. And there were a few of those, don't get me wrong. But I always assumed people wanted to do great and take pride in their work and take pride in themselves. And then you just figure out, how do you get there? Because you're both looking for the same outcome.
Yeah, you're on the same side or team. I think that's where it becomes adversarial, intentionally or unintentionally. You wind up with these accidental adversarial relationships at work. And I think by discussing it and saying, hey, what are you committed to? Oh, wonderful. That's amazing. That's actually what I'm committed to too. Then you both get to be on the same side or team, as opposed to seeing one another as adversaries in business or as friends.
If something became adversarial, I viewed it as a failure on my part. I let it get out of control.
Wow. Very cool, Mike. Well, Mike, I wish I could talk to you for hours, but I know obviously your speaking schedule is huge. I think offline you were just telling me that you sold 10,000 books just to one company for all of their employees, so that way they could all read It's Your Ship. And I know our CEO
a business owner in Canada loved it so much. And he got it from a CEO of an aerospace company in LA who called him and said, this is the only business book you need to read. And he read it and he called me and said, I agree. This is the only business book I need to read. And he just bought 10,400 copies for all his employees worldwide. And it's my biggest single sale ever. And the book has been out 17 years. I've now sold over 1.1 million copies. And originally when the book came out, the publisher thought I might sell 20,000 copies. So it's I'm very humbled and grateful as to how well the book has done. And after 17 years, I'm not embarrassed about one thing that was in that book. And it's all about, how do you invest in your people? How do you connect with them? How do you engage them so that you can drive performance and control your own destiny in tough economic times? And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, staying safe. And that's what my goal was on the ship, was to keep my sailors safe. And organizations have to do everything they can to keep their organization safe. And it comes down to, how do you engage your people to help you do that?
I think that's so smart. Were there any other takeaways that I didn't get a chance to ask you about, Mike, or anything else, just any other tidbits that you'd love to leave our listeners with from today's show?
No, it's been great talking with you, Jennifer. And I've got a website, apgleadership.com, alphapapagolfleadership.com. The USS Benfold was an Aegis class destroyer. And so I named my leadership company Aegis Performance Group. And so it's M. Abershoff at apgleadership.com. And if anybody has a question, they're happy to reach out, and I answer every email personally.
That's huge. It's very rare that I meet anybody in today's day and age where everybody's so busy that you can say that. And you were so great, Mike. I mean, it's such a privilege and an honor to have you on the show, as I mentioned, because I just sat there and I listened to your every word. I hung on your every word, as did everybody. There were 300 of us in that room. And if I recall, I think you got a standing ovation because it was that good. So for anybody out there who's tuning in and thinking of hiring somebody for a partnership or a leadership or just to, you know, even do some team building, I'm sure there are many great things that Mike can contribute to you and to your team. So please do reach out to Mike. Do read his book. It is extraordinary. He has many other great stories in there as well that we didn't even have time to fully get into today. But I'm so thankful for the time that we did have with you today, Mike.
You got it, Jennifer. Thank you and have a happy holidays.
Yes, absolutely. Happy holidays to you too. And thank you so much to all of our listeners for tuning in today. Thank you, you know, for tuning in, checking out today's show and playing around today as we got to listen to Mike's wonderful wisdom on leadership. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can always go to iTunes and go to Get Yourself the Job on iTunes and find today's show as well as all the other shows we've done over the past 3.5 years. And you can also go to the latalkradio.com webpage, channel 1, and go to Get Yourself the Job. And at the bottom of the Get Yourself the Job page, you'll also find an archive for today's show as well as any other shows that we've done. And feel free to please leave us any comments, interact with us. You can leave ratings and comments on the Facebook page as well as on iTunes. And I invite you to check out as well if you're interested in the business world and want to learn more about specific business techniques and how to harness metaphysical principles in business, please do check out our new show on Awake TV Network, and that is awaketvnetwork.com. The show airs every Thursday at 7 a.m. And this week, I'll be having Stephen Gold, who is the CTO of Hudson Bay Capital, and he'll be joining me to talk about how mentorship is important in business. So thank you so much to everybody who tuned in. Happy holidays, and a special thanks to you, Mike, for joining us today.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.